So univariate data cleaning, we're going to start by taking a look at the data. All statistical package has multiple bits and pieces for how to look at data. Mostly we have used frequencies because it's kind of nice, because you can get tables and pictures and descriptive or inferential statistics all in one place. You can get all of those other places, but that's one place to get the whole batch. You can get even more out of the SPSS thing called Explore. The Explore was built about 30 years ago during the heyday of exploratory data analysis, when people didn't just calculate the mean and the standard deviation and go on as if everything was fine, where they stopped and looked at data a little more carefully. And so this is set up for the kinds of things that we want to look at and make decisions about. So Analyze Descriptive Statistics Explore. It's got the usual sort of thing where it asks you for some variables. This factor list, SPSS, SAS, some versions of R use the word factor to mean a grouping variable. That's all they mean. So if you put a variable in there that was rural versus urban, it would do everything you asked it to do for each rural-urban group. Watch out for that. That shit can get away from you. Because if you're asking a bunch of stuff and you've got, and you put in rural, urban, you put in maybe a 5-category gender variable, now you're up to, it's going to give you 10 of everything it shows you. So make sure that you know what you're asking for. Or sit back, get your favorite beverage, your favorite data collection beverage, and look at all that printout, because there's information in there. We're going to ask for statistics and get descriptives and percentiles. There's all kinds of cool shit in here. Right now I want to focus on getting the expanded version of the usual stuff, and we're going to need percentiles for our own outlier analysis. There's absolutely nothing wrong with this outlier analysis. There's absolutely nothing wrong with most of the outlier analyses that are embedded in all the different packages, or you can go out and buy. You can spend anywhere from nothing to a subscription, to a few hundred dollars, to a couple thousand dollars on an outlier analysis program. Almost all of them use pretty much the same thing, but the input-output is easier or harder, cleaner or sweeter. I want you to do just a few of these things by hand so you get a feel of how the process operates. But you're going to go back to different places, different labs, different advisors, different research buddies, and you're going to run into all kinds of different things, and they're all working for those people or they wouldn't have survived, right? Remember we've talked about rules of thumb before? Rules of thumb are great where they were generated, but they might not transfer well. So I don't ever want to hear, well, Cal says you have to do this shit by hand. No, he's not. I want you to do the homework. I want you to build a couple of these things by hand because it seems as though that helps understand things. But nobody's going to ask you to analyze a data set like I just got done doing with 350,000 cases and 82 variables. I did not do what we're about to do on 5 variables on 82 variables. I have a statistical package that I like, that I have modified to my liking. I go like that. Get about 84 pages of printout. We're going to get histograms, because the combination of percentiles, histograms, and the normality plot gives you the core information that you're going to use for making decisions. There's lots of other cool stuff here. And like I say, your research communities will drag you through all sorts of fun stuff. It tells us that we have 95 cases in each of 3 variables. Clever labeling here of my variables. And here's the cooler version of statistics. Now, it says descriptives. When SPSS, SAS, and most packages say descriptives, they don't mean descriptive statistics. They mean not inferential statistical tests. When they calculate the variance and the standard deviation, they are using an inferential formula over n minus 1. So it says descriptives, but these are intended as inferential. These are intended as estimates of what's going on in the population. Most packages, again, when they say descriptive, they don't mean descriptive versus inferential. They mean univariate versus the significance test you're going to do later. Sorry. So you get a mean. You get a 95% confidence interval around the mean. You get a thing called a 5% trimmed mean. A 5% trimmed mean literally says, throw away the 5% of the highest scores, 5% of the lowest scores, build me a mean based on the middle 90. And you say to yourself, oof, damn. Well, here's the logic. What part of the distribution should you use to estimate the middle of the distribution? Well, hell, when you say it that way, maybe this isn't crazy. In fact, statistically speaking, the most accurate estimate of the mean across the broadest array is a 30% trimmed mean. You throw away the top 30%, you throw away the bottom 30%, you grab the middle 40% and calculate the mean of that, and you tend to get things that are more reliable, replicate better, and extend better than other things. So why don't we do that? Because nobody's got a decent measure of variability. Estimating the variability of a distribution isn't done in the middle of the distribution. You need the whole damn distribution. And if that distribution is skewed or has outliers in it, then that estimate of the standard deviation is screwed up, which is why we're here. We are here to make sure that our data are not badly skewed and don't have outliers. Because if we can minimize those two things, it increases the chances that we're going to get good inferential analyses with the statistical models that we already know. You get the median. And one of the quick things that you learn to do is compare the mean and the median. Because if the mean and the median are close together, that probably means you don't have interesting skewing. Go back and look. There's a slide where we talked about this in Unit 2, first day of Unit 2. If the mean and the median are in the same place, you probably have a symmetrical distribution. Can't make promises about normal. The farther the mean and the median split, it's because you've got a skewed distribution that's tugging the mean towards that end. So, one of the oldest and quickest ways of saying how screwed am I is to compare the mean and the median. And these are awful close, so we're probably going to be okay. We get a variance, we get a standard deviation, we get a minimum and a maximum, which are going to be more important than they usually are. You got a range, interquartile range, and there's our other two friends, skewness and kurtosis. So this skewness value is awful close to zero. We probably don't have a problem. Remember, the threshold is 0.8. The skewness larger than positive 0.8, smaller than negative 0.8, triggers us to start looking for enough skewing that it's going to screw up our stats. So just as a guess, X1's looking pretty good. If we look at X2, we got a bit of a stretch. It looks like some positive skewing here because the mean is, 10% bigger than the median. And sure enough, the skewing is greater than our threshold of 0.8. Here we have a median that's a whole bunch bigger than the mean. That suggests the mean is being tugged down by negative skewing, and voila. Now remember, you have the damn skewing value. Look at the skewing value. Don't make the judgment based on the mean and the median, but start looking at that. So if you don't have the skewness, you've got something you can check and see if you have a problem. These are percentiles. What it does is it sets things up and divides them up into these distributional sections. These hinges, these Tukey's hinges, same John Tukey that gave us LSD and HSD, these Tukey's hinges are what we're going to use for outlier analysis in a little bit. That's why we asked for the percentile, was to get this table, and it's the bottom part of the table that we're going to use to build stuff. SPSS and most statistical packages offer these tests of normality and maybe several others. And they're set up so that if you have a significant result, you're saying that the data are not normally distributed. Now, here's the thing. These statistics behave themselves best when you have a very large sample. Because these statistics focus their attention on the outside of the distribution. And the outside of the distribution is more accurate when you've got more cases there because you've got large samples. But the bigger the sample size, the more powerful the test. And the more likely you are to get a result that says the data are not normal. And the more likely that result is to be a type 1 error. In normal statistics that we do, a larger sample does not promote type 1 errors. In this sort of statistic, it can. And so one of the people who taught me stats like to say that using these significance tests before you apply a t-test or a correlation is like sending a rowboat out into the ocean to see if it's safe for the Queen Mary. You need to know what your community standards are for tests of normality, but with samples larger than about 25 or 30, these can be a little tight-assed and lead you to do things that are unnecessary. The other thing we asked for is histograms and normality plots. The more symmetrical and normal this looks like, the more the dots line up on the green line. If you have interesting skewing, you pull things away from the lines. So we thought, looking at the mean, the median, and the skewness, that this would be fairly symmetrical, and it's not bad for a data set of 95. They're never as pretty as you'd like them to be. This is definitely positively skewed. This is definitely negatively skewed. All right, data cleaning. This is pretty much the same sort of information we had in the PowerPoint. It's in here because a lot of people use this handout that don't use the PowerPoint. But here's our basic rule. How much transformation for how much skewness? Please note these transformations are for positive skewing only. Negative skewing is handled first by transposing and then apply the transformation. What do we do about outliers? We're going to look at identifying outliers, and then if we do identify any cases that are outliers, we have to decide among trimming and Windsorizing. I am hoping to build a bias into you towards Windsorizing. I really like the research and the data analyses that suggest that Windsorizing gives us a good estimation of the population mean and a better estimation of the population standard deviation than does trimming. Outliers typically are a large value, just not that freaking large. All right, so let's take a look working down through these five variables. All right. The way that we do this is we identify an upper bound and a lower bound for a distribution. Any value larger than the upper bound, you know, that shouldn't help me to do that, but it always does. Any value larger than the upper bound is considered too large. It probably doesn't come from the population, and we're worried that it's going to screw up the mean and the standard deviation. Any value smaller than the lower bound, same problem. Some combination of it doesn't belong there, and it's going to screw up our estimation of the mean standard deviations and NOVA's t-test, stuff like that. So what we do is we look at the range between the 25th and the 75th percentile, take that times 1.5, add it to that hinge value and subtract it from the lower hinge. So here's what we're trying to do. We take the middle 50% of the distribution. The middle 50% of the distribution is between 42 and 55. That's our middle 50%. Based on some very clever math that Tukey and his graduate students did, they came up with a substitution for two standard deviation rule that is confused and fooled less than the two standard deviation rule, that seems to behave better as an outlier analysis. So you take that middle 50%, you find that difference. You go 1.5 times that difference above and below, and those are your boundaries. Okay? So how do we do this? Recodes. I'm going to turn variable x1 into x1 trimmed. Notice, trimmed. So, I plug in my values up here that I've carefully hidden. So when I take my range and 1.5 times that from my lower hinge, that means any value smaller than 2.25, we're going to fix. We're not sure why it's there, because you can't solve that problem. We just know that if we leave values smaller than 22.5 in there, they probably don't belong, and they're certainly going to perturb the estimate of the mean, the standard deviation, R's and P's. So, if it's whatever the lowest score is through 22.49, it gets turned into a system missing value. That's what trimming means. See ya! We have some lovely parting gifts. 74.51 through highest, sys miss. Now notice, this is the highest acceptable value. If somebody is a 74.5, we keep them. It has to be larger than that. Everybody else gets their same score. Now we have trimmed data. Once again, let me admonish you to always recode into different variables. Don't mess up your original variables. Leave them alone, because you may end up doing several different things before you're happy. And so here are the final trimmed values. Notice that we can tell if we have any outliers, because anything bigger than 74 and less than 22, so we come up here to our data, and we see that for X1, the smallest value is a 26, so we don't have any small outliers, but we have at least one too large outlier, because we have a 77. We don't know how many, but we know at least one. If you have at least one, then you go do this. If you don't have any, unless it's a homework, don't do it. All right, winds are rising. First thing, name the variable different. I know that sounds like, nah, I wouldn't do that. Some have. Make sure you name it different. Now, we're still identifying anything lower than 22.5, but instead of cutting it loose, we adjust it to the 22.5. The process of trimming is dismissing. The process of Windsorizing is to make outliers the most extreme acceptable value. So anything bigger than 75, 74.5 gets turned into 74.5. Anything smaller than 22.4 or 22.5 gets turned in. Again, we know that at least one large score is going to be pulled down to that top value. All right. So we started out with no interesting skewing, so we check for outliers. We cleaned up our outliers, X1's ready to go. As far as we're concerned, X1's ready to go. X2, well, X2 had substantial positive skewing, and it has a continuous distribution, this x2 or something? That's x2 square root. So it doesn't have any holes in it. It doesn't have a nice distribution, a pile of outliers out here. This is sort of a typical positive skewing, so we're going to operate on it. The amount of skewing is consistent with a square root transformation, and so we're going to build a new variable, cleverly called x2 square root, where we're going to take x2 and apply a square root transformation. Always build new variables. I suggest that you name the variable something that you're likely to recognize. I also strongly recommend that you go in and add a value label where you say x2 underline sqrt is the square root transformation of x2. Leave yourself breadcrumbs. So the x2 square root has a skewness of 0.699, would push us within threshold. Here I show you both a square root transformation and a log transformation. Clearly the log transformation is a little better than the square root transformation. The usual notion is the least transformation it gets you within your boundaries. So most people would look at this and prefer the square root transformation to the log transformation. And remember that log transformations can cause us a problem. One way to multiply two things is to add their logs, which means if you're doing a multiple regression analysis, and we'll mention this again when we do multiple regressions in the spring, if you're doing a regression analysis and you put two variables in that have been log transformed, you're not putting in their weighted average, you're putting in their weighted multiplication. And that's not what you're hoping those variables are going to tell you within that model. So you will occasionally run into people who don't even teach a log transformation. They jump straight from square root to inverse, or emphasize using models that are designed for positively skewed distribution, which is a fine idea. Then, now that we've cleaned up our skewness, we still want to check to see if there's outliers. So we plug in x2 square root, and we get back its descriptive statistics, and we get back its Tukey's hinges. We put this into the formula. Oh, by the way, because I love you, this is the most embarrassing programming I've ever done. Is it in here? If anybody sees the computator, maybe I just go get it again. Yeah, there's one of them somewhere. I made you an outlier computator. You put in two numbers, you get two numbers back. It's not very fancy, but it does mean not doing shit by hand. The whole reason for computators is not doing shit by hand. So notice you're putting in the lower and the upper hinge. That should say upper. It does say Q3 though. And you get back your boundaries. Why does that say that? Oh, this is a nightmare. Okay. It's so freaking hard to change one of these and get it to stick. No. And so this tells us that we have this, and then we go check. We go check our outliers. X3. Now remember, X3 was, when we started this mess, negatively skewed. This is the example I'm hoping you'll pay attention to for a negatively skewed transformation. We want to apply a square root transformation, but we can't apply it directly because we have a negatively skewed distribution. with a maximum value of 106, because we asked for the min and the max. So with 106 as the largest value, since 106 was the maximum, we're going to subtract x3 from 107 and take the square root of that. The process of subtracting everybody's x3 score from 107 is what's called reflecting. You can, if you want to, and some people like to, do this in two steps. You can make a variable that's called x3 underline reflected, which is 107 minus x3. Then you can take the square root of x3 reflected, or you can do it in one step. It's up to you. Self-actualize. When we do the square root transformation, we notice that the skewness has flipped from negative 1.2 to a positive 0.46. What we care about is that our skewness is now within the boundary and you don't have to worry about transforming it more. How y'all doing with this? Because this sometimes makes people uncomfortable because we are messing about with the data. We're actually changing scores. We're not just throwing things away that displease us, but we're changing them so that they please us. That seems not only fascist, but wrong. The purpose of a data set is to represent who, what, where, when, and how we're trying to represent and comport itself to the analyses we're about to do. That's what we're trying to do. The people that have studied outlier analyses and transformations since the late 60s tell us that this improves our data. We did a study for a large medical journal where we got the data. The reason we were doing it is they had a couple of issues with replication that were bothering them, as opposed to the ones that weren't, apparently. But, you know, they wanted to spend money on this, and I'm willing to do the analyses. I thought it would be fun. So I have data from 200 studies that split about 70-30 in their results, not counting the nulls, just counting the ones that found the effect one way versus an effect the other way. You know, the really important failure to replicate, which fucking way is the result? Because we'd already done the study that showed that nearly all of the nulls were power problems. And that if you either do a meta-analysis or other things like that, most of that cleaned itself up. So what we did is we took the original data, reanalyzed it just to make sure they didn't booger anything up, which happens sometimes. And then we did a data cleaning and reanalyzed them. At the end of the data cleaning and reanalyzing, we went from about a 70-30 split in the two directions to a 96.4% split. We were getting reversals because of outliers and heavily skewed distributions. That made me an even bigger fan of data cleaning. Now, X4 and X5. Check out these puppies. Now, these are similarly positively skewed. But the shape of the distribution, in particular, the continuity of the distribution, is importantly different. I would call the thing on the left positively skewed. I would call the thing on the right not bad, with some outliers. But we get the same skewness value. And this is something I'm going to start whining about more and more as we get into the more sophisticated statistics. Beware of single number summaries of complicated things. Skewness is just tailedness. But we think of skewness as an index of the shape of the distribution. Shape is center and spread and skewness and kurtosis and continuity. You're not going to get all five of those in one little number. So you can't just, what Cal's saying is, you can't just look at the skewness and decide if life's good, and if it isn't good, because that's way bigger than 0.8, how to operate on it. You really need to stop and look at distributions, get the QQ plots, get the histogram, because we want to operate on these differently. We had a slide about this on Wednesday. This looks like positively skewed distribution, so I want to unskew it first and then check for outliers. This looks pretty damn good except for this blip out here, and who knows about them, we should check. So on this, I want to do an outlier analysis first and then check for skewing. You have two tools to get you a symmetrical distribution without outliers. Always apply both tools. Sometimes you end up just running them in different orders and making a professional decision. Remember, that decision has to be hypothesis blind. So here we crank out a bunch of different things. So we got square root and log transformations. And we see that the square root transformation isn't enough to clean things up. The log is enough to clean things up. Now we have something that's less skewed, that the mean and the standard deviation are going to be less of a problem. Cleaning up skewing does not typically get rid of outliers. The discontinuity is what creates the outliers, not the distance. And so we'd probably be pretty happy with Q4 log. We're not going to be very happy with Q5 log because it still has this outlier set. And so we come in here and we grab X5 back to the original, grab those hinges, plug them into the formula, operate on that, and we see that our trimmed stuff looks awfully good. All of that skewing, that 1.5 skewing's really just 4 cases out there on the edge, pulling that mean and standard deviation and skewness out. The moral of the story is you transform each variable according to its needs.